Welcome to Kaplan's Learn Better podcast. My name is Stuart Pedley-Smith, Head of Learning at Kaplan here in the UK. In this series, you're going to hear from both students and experts as we take a look at a range of topics related to personal and career success in the world of accountancy and finance. I have to be on my best behaviour today because my guest is Cathy Walton, the CEO of Kaplan Financial. Cathy comes from a big family and is the youngest of nine. She's proud of her northern working class roots, which don't seem to have held her back. But maybe that's not the case for everyone. For some, your background and how you speak can limit your ambition and slow down your career. But sometimes it shapes you. Which might explain why Cathy argues that organisations should provide opportunity for all. And one way of doing this is by offering apprenticeships, which she believes have the ability to transform lives. In fact, you might say that she's passionate about them. Cathy, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me, Stuart.
Cathy, did I overdo the impact perhaps your background had on your thoughts today and your views?
No, I just wish that there'd been more apprenticeships around when I was leaving school. Because certainly at that point, coming from a big family and nobody had been to university, so that wasn't something that we talked about, and it was all go and get a job, go and earn money. And I wanted to continue my education, and it felt like I had to do one or the other. So I think that does lend itself to one of the reasons why I'm passionate about apprenticeships. But I did actually end up going to university. So let's just say I've seen the best of both worlds.
And before fees, I guess.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you make a good point there. I actually did leave and go to work. Didn't get an apprenticeship. I went to work for one of the banks, started to do my foundation in the Institute of Banking because I knew I wanted to continue to learn. And what was really interesting that I would speak to people in the bank and they would go, why are you not going to university? And this wasn't a question that my parents were challenging me on. But why aren't you going to university? If you join the bank, you'll suddenly get cheap loans, you'll get a mortgage, you'll get a credit card, and you won't be able to leave because it'll be too expensive to leave. Go, go now. They used to pull me down into corridors and go, why are you not going to university? So it was so interesting to me that actually I was surrounded by people that just assumed that I would. So I did.
Did you feel privileged to go to university, Cathy?
Absolutely. I mean, not only were there no fees, Stuart, but I got a grant to go.
Right.
Because of the basically, you know, they were checking about the incomes of my parents and so on. I still came out with a student loan. Student loans had just been invented, showing my age now. So through a combination of no fees and a grant, and taking out a relatively small loan, and working part time throughout university, I was able to finance it. I have no idea how people afford to do that these days if they come from the same position that I did.
Mm. You were lucky, maybe, but where do you stand on hard work?
Oh, well, I would say going to university and holding down part-time jobs wasn't easy. And that was throughout the summer. I'd always have a job that would take me all through summer. I wish I could say that those jobs were work experience where I was going to end up, but I didn't know where I wanted to end up. So that wouldn't have helped. I think the longest stint I did was 3 months doing quality control in a toilet roll factory. So it wasn't exactly where I was going to be headed to as a career. But I think it is important. Clearly, whatever you put in, you get out. I think that's true of anything that you do.
It's always useful to find out a little bit about the people that come on the podcast. But tell us now about apprenticeships. Could you just give us a sort of a flavour or a definition for the people that perhaps don't understand exactly what they are, or maybe have got, you know, memories of apprenticeships in the 70s? So what's new, what's modern, what's so good about an apprenticeship as it stands in 2023?
I think the important thing is probably just to talk about what an apprenticeship isn't. Really, I think that for this, it's still the case, Stuart, that many people, when you say apprenticeship, what is it that jumps into their mind? It jumps into their mind things like plumbing or hairdressing or basically things that are skills, but they don't realize that actually apprenticeships are, I want to be somebody, I want to do a particular job. I've never done it before. I don't have any qualifications and I don't have any work experience, but that's what I know I want to do next. And what an apprenticeship does is it defines, if you want to be good at this role, you have to have this knowledge, you have to demonstrate these skills, and we're looking for these behaviours. So it's really clear at the outset, that is the matrix that is required to be good at that role. And then you head towards it. So I think it's just important not to pigeonhole apprenticeships. There are so many you can do these days, and they're emerging all the time.
Yeah, and I think there's also this sort of perception of that people don't appreciate the sort of, like, most of the professions by definition are skills-based apprenticeships, aren't they? Doctor is a skills-based apprenticeship. You know, you wouldn't want to go, it's not an academic qualification.
It's not, it's far from it. I think sometimes the misconception is that because sometimes there is quite a lot of technical knowledge associated with a job, that's what people assume that the job is about. But I mean, you've just used the medical profession as an example. It doesn't matter how much you know about drugs, for example. The important thing is, can you actually administer drugs? So it's all about the skill that is associated with that underpinning knowledge. But of course, typically, you'll learn that underpinning knowledge and then you'll learn how to apply it.
Yeah. In the introduction, I said that, you know, you're inspired really about, you know, finding opportunities and getting people from different backgrounds into different job roles. What is it the apprenticeship does that gets people those opportunities that perhaps wouldn't normally be there? Is it the setting up of the scheme? Is it the way that you're taught or you learn, or is it a combination of everything?
I think it is multiple factors. Because it is, everybody starts at a zero base. That means that in theory, it doesn't matter what you've done before, because you're all starting on step one of, say, 10 steps. Yes, it's true that for some apprenticeships, if you're strong in maths or strong in English, you know, you might have an advantage to start with, but you soon lose that and everybody kind of catches up. So I think it's opportunistic from that perspective. It's something that is nationally available, which is not true of all things. And what's important is the standard is a national standard. So wherever you are, you know, whether you're in Bristol or Birmingham or London or Manchester or in a little village, for example, if you're training to be a trainee accountant and using an apprenticeship, the simple fact is you're all following the same standard as to what a good apprenticeship looks like and what a good apprentice looks like. So it's just this common benchmark. That means that for your career afterwards, if you've got that apprenticeship, you know, that is basically the gold standard that allows you to then go on to do whatever you want to do in your further career. I would also just add as well that I think this really leans fantastically towards the fact that all big employers, but certainly the large accountancy firms and banks, they really want to create opportunities for people that would not normally have thought of banking as a profession because of their background, because of their gender, because of their colour. It could be a whole range of things. And I think that apprenticeships, in combination with that impetus, that's unlocking the ability to do that for some organisations.
Yeah. And it is sort of one of the cornerstones of education, isn't it? Social mobility. And this is like a doorway. You know, so we all talk about it and the fact that anybody can achieve anything, which is a lovely place to live. But you need an enabler of that. And an apprenticeship is an enabler, isn't it?
Most education, it's not the education itself, it's what it leads to afterwards. And so it's back to your enabler point. The true value of education is, but what did you do with it afterwards? And I think that's the other reason why I am passionate about apprenticeships, because, you know, if you learn something in college, that's great. But the true measure is, and then when you went into work, how did you use it? Have you got the evidence that you've used it, that you could put into your portfolio, or you could use in some kind of simulation or project that can demonstrate that you learnt it and you used it? If you use it and then apply it, it will actually mean that you'll remember what you've learned for longer as well.
Mm. Can you say something about the way the qualification, the professional qualification, sits alongside the apprenticeship and also bringing in the skills and behaviours part of the apprenticeship?
Yeah, and it probably is worth just being really clear. I mean, although I'm very, very pro-apprenticeships and always will be, I'm also very, very pro whatever gets you where you need to get to in your career. And so many of the apprenticeships that exist now, when they didn't, what people would do in lieu of that is they would do a professional qualification. And these professional qualifications, certainly in certain sectors, basically, if you don't have these qualifications, this is your license to practice by having this qualification. With the advent of apprenticeships, when these were developed, there was a concern that there would be duplication. But hang on, people are going to need to be qualified in order to do the job, and then they're going to have to do an apprenticeship. Well, surely we're talking about the same knowledge, skills and behaviour. And very often we are. But I think what I would say is that the apprenticeship probably goes further than most of the qualifications do, particularly on the behavioural side. And I think when you think about knowledge, skills and behaviours, very often it's quite hard to examine some of these things. I mean, the Institute actually do an incredible job of trying to make sure that people learn and apply under exam conditions. You know, you have case studies and you have, you know, scenarios, and this is as good as it can get, unless you're going to start doing what doctors do, which is having things like OSCEs and proper skills tests. In the absence of those skills tests, what the apprenticeship then does is say, no, we're not going to test it under an exam environment, but we're going to test it in your work environment instead. And we're not just going to take your word that you can do it, we're going to ask your line manager to confirm that you can do it as well. So it's almost better than any skills-based exam, because it's actually getting you to do it in the workplace.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, isn't it, in terms of to give status to a qualification or a certification, you need some benchmark, but that you can say it's been externally validated. Now, a three-hour exam is one way of doing that. But the way that you've just described that in terms of, you know, somebody shadowing somebody in the workplace, that's the bit that the behavior part that you can never examine. You can ask somebody, do you know how to do something in an exam? And they might be very good at answering that, but when they come to the situation for real, they just don't do it, which means that the learning wasn't good enough in the first place, i.e. that it wasn't embedded, and that's why one of the things I think with apprenticeships and general skills in general, you need practice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think also, I know lots of learners who really don't enjoy exams that much. I mean, nobody wakes up and thinks, hooray, I've got an exam today. But actually, that's not where they perform best. And that they might pass their exam, but only just, and it doesn't actually reflect how good they are. But then when you have a look at the apprenticeship, okay, so you've passed the exam, so that, you know, we know that you know a lot, and we know that you can apply it to an extent, but actually show me in the workplace how you'd apply this. So you could get someone who, you know, who marginally passed their qualification exams and then goes on to get a distinction in an apprenticeship. Because they're just better at the demonstration aspect than necessarily the way they articulate themselves under. Let's be honest, an exam is very often not an authentic situation. I mean, the institutes make it as much as they can, but it's probably under more time pressure than you are in real life. And also, you know, you can't go and ask someone for a bit of help along the way, which is what would naturally happen in a workplace. Pause, come back to something later. So we do as much as we can using qualifications, but the methods of assessment are so much broader and therefore, I think, much more valuable when you look at what we do under an apprenticeship.
And it's quite strange, isn't it, that one of the skills that you develop sometimes in a workplace is asking someone else. Where, you know, you sort of, if you had a multiple choice question and said, how do you solve this problem, you wouldn't probably put, you know, well, ask somebody. But in the workplace, it's a skill. So, well, when I get stuck, I actually go and speak to somebody.
Absolutely. It is absolutely the professional thing to do, to say, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do here. Can you imagine writing that on an exam paper and hoping to get some credit for it?
Yeah. And I suppose just before we move on to the next thing, the broader point here is about, from government's perspective, is about the skills gap. And the skills gap is not just people are coming out of schools and universities and institutions. It's not that they haven't got the qualifications. It's that the qualifications themselves are not preparing them for the workplace. So there's a big economic issue sitting behind the purpose of apprenticeships, isn't there?
There is. And like I say, ultimately, where this starts, and if you know, in terms of the government positions on this, their actual starting point is, what do employers need? So as in, what jobs are out there? What jobs are emerging? What skills within jobs are changing? Okay, so let's find out what employers need. And then what we should do is we should direct education towards basic, and by employers, what that means is society, the economy needs. Because the last thing you want is people going and learning loads of stuff and then coming out and finding that they can't find a job because it doesn't match to what employers want. And then that means that the employers also haven't got the right staff. And that's exactly the skills gap that you're explaining. So what happens with apprenticeships, for example, is that, you know, every few years, the employers will be asked to revisit. So this is happening with some of the accountancy ones just now, asked to revisit the apprenticeship standards. Can we just be clear? Are these still the same areas of knowledge, skills and behaviour? Is this really what someone would do in this role? So interestingly, in a recent Trailblazer meeting, one of the things was, no, we need to make sure that also we cover off sustainability within knowledge. Because they need to realise that certainly as a finance professional, you could have a huge role in what happens in the future in the organisations that you work in. And that's a whole other topic that you could go into. But what I would say is the Institutes for the Professional Qualifications desperately try and do this as well. I suppose the difficulty is that every time an institute decides to say, well, what do we need in our syllabus? It's quite a long process. And then we have to stick with that for 2 or 3 years. And it's quite prescriptive. It'll be all the way down to the learning outcome, you know, that level of detail, which you know. Mm. Whereas what happens in the apprenticeships, the framework, it's quite loose. So even though it talks about sustainability, it wouldn't go down to a really granular level about saying exactly what that person needed to know. And that means that training providers can keep updating that content just to kind of keep up with what's happening in the outside world, which is so much harder to do when you're in an actual exam regime.
We just touched on this, but it moves us nicely onto the sort of like triangular relationship between the employer, the apprentice, and the education provider, the Kaplan, if you like, in the middle. So tell us about why an employer should have an apprentice. What does it do for them and in terms of staff development?
One of the advantages of taking in someone who perhaps doesn't have experience, brand new to role, that employers would talk about is that you can mould that person to basically think about this role in the context of your organisation. They're learning in your environment. And therefore, that would mean that they would be a more skilled employee for you because they've learned using your methodology. Anecdotally, what employers tell me is that apprentices can be more loyal as an employee than your average employee, shall we say, because you are the one who brought them in, you invested all that time and money, all right, government money, but it feels like your money, and there's a real cost, there is a cost to having an apprentice. You've invested all of that when they're at this age where they're just starting out in their careers. And it does tend to create this culture of this symbiotic relationship of we're kind of helping each other out here. And we can see in our statistics that apprentices are often more likely to stay
right
than non-apprentices.
Yeah. And the, you know, there's costs, you know, just in terms of business costs and staff changing. And then there's all the issues around bringing somebody in to do the job that somebody else just... So when you wrap the apprenticeship around all that, all the time and money that you spend on the apprenticeship sort of probably gets tied into the fact that recruitment costs are so expensive and, you know, they're better, they're not so good. So the longer that you can retain key staff is another sort of modern day issue, isn't it?
Yeah, and there are situations where you can have apprenticeships that build on top of each other. So you can do like a level 2, right, then a level 3, then a level 4. So actually you've got a very long journey with the same member of staff.
Yeah. And so once again, that idea of accommodating different backgrounds where somebody says, I don't want to sit down for 3 years or 4 years and qualify as an accountant, but I, in fact, I'm not really that bothered. But you do one apprenticeship, and then 2 years later, you think,
Can I do the foundation level and then see how I feel?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the achievement of that apprenticeship gives the confidence to go.
Absolutely.
And it's just coming back to your, you know, this whole point about it, there's the opening of a door, but there's also the realizing of an ambition. Some people would say, well, like you said, I always wanted to be in training. I wanted to be an accountant. I wanted to do this. And they have that foresight. Some people just follow their nose. They say, well, how did I end up here? So, well, actually, I'm not quite sure, but it just seemed quite logical at the time, you know?
Yeah. And you know, life's like that, isn't it, really? Hmm. But I think that, you were talking about kind of line managers. And I think that, I think it is important that line managers do go into apprenticeships with open eyes. Because, if you're employing someone who is doing a qualification of some kind, but they're doing it outside of an apprenticeship, then, you know, it takes as long as it takes. And, you know, in terms of giving them time off to go to college, maybe, maybe not. Depends on the individual policy of the organisation. How many papers do they sit at the same time? Does it take them 4, 5, 6, 7 years to qualify, whatever it is? If you sign an apprenticeship, you are agreeing to contribute 20% of the time, at least, of that apprenticeship for them to be out of work and either at college or doing activities that contribute towards it. So it's almost like that member of staff is a 0.8 part-time member of staff. That's the way that you should think about it. And so it is a huge investment in their development from a time perspective. Even if you do get government funding, you need to appreciate that. But then that means that when I'm speaking to someone who's thinking about being an apprentice, it's like, are you aware that you're really going to be working 80% of the time and the other 20% is about your development? And that's when the penny drops. And that is a requirement. If you want to access the government funding, you have to be prepared to make that commitment. So to me, it is the government and the employer making a combined commitment in that individual, you know, for what can be a long period of time. And it isn't just about, I'll give you the time off. That line manager has to have that check-in on a regular basis, at least every 12 weeks, to sit down with the learner and their coach and look back at the last 12 weeks and say, how's it gone? And look forward to the next 12 weeks and how's this going to be? And it's like having a mini appraisal four times a year. And there's not many organisations that would do that necessarily outside of an actual apprenticeship.
Yeah, and you've kind of sort of moved on seamlessly, Kathy, to this almost pros and cons, isn't it really? And maybe it's more about accepting responsibilities than a disadvantage. You know what I mean? I would like to put people on apprenticeship, but there's a lot of paperwork or there's a lot of commitment from us.
Yeah,
but part of that is good. You know, to attend, having, you know, being brought to the table to a certain extent. So I've got a date in my diary, I've got to go this afternoon. But the value that gives to the employee, in a similar way that you've been talking about, you know, please appreciate that your employer is investing in you. So your boss is sat there, not for a 2 minutes, but they're sat there talking about you. It's hard to put a value on what impact that has on the individual.
Yeah, and I can't help flipping around between apprenticeships and not being an apprentice, because it's not hard and fast everybody should do an apprenticeship. And I want to make that absolutely clear. The situations where it's the right thing and the situations where, if I was speaking to you as a friend, you were saying, this is my situation, I would be saying, go for the qualification, but don't necessarily sign up to an apprenticeship. And I think that, I mean, for me, areas where it still suits, if we just talk about the individual that's learning for a second, you know, if you know you want to be something and you're prepared to sign up with that employer for 3 years, then go for it and sign up for your apprenticeship. But you might be in two minds about whether or not, I don't know, I think I want to be an X, but I'm not 100% sure. And actually, do I think I want to do all of my experience in this one place, or would I like to move around a bit? Have I got any aspirations to travel abroad? Have I got any aspirations to even move to Scotland? And you can't carry on with your English apprenticeship, right? So you have to think about these things. So if you feel that you're not rooted enough to want to do that, don't say, well, I'll wait till I feel like that and then I'll make a start. You could start learning your qualification, and you can, the way that people have done for decades. But if you think, that's a good employer, I'm fairly sure I want to do this role, I feel quite settled in myself, I'm really attracted by all that investment, right, it's a no-brainer.
So you've talked about the employee a little bit. Is there a situation where you would talk to an employer and say, I don't think apprenticeships is the right route?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we are having that conversation with some clients at the moment. So when the apprenticeship levy came out, there was a big rush to both take on brand new staff and put them through apprenticeships, and look at your existing staff and put them through apprenticeships as well. And it's certainly the case that there's greater success with the former group than with the latter. And I think it's important that, you know, if a member of staff who's worked in your organisation for a number of years comes to you and says, I'd like to develop myself and I'd like to do such and such, you should consider, is there an apprenticeship that covers that? But actually, there might be more of a bite-sized piece of learning that would absolutely suit that. Or it might be that you've got someone who wants to start learning accountancy, doing qualifications, but wants to really take their time to do it, wants to be able to take breaks, and for a whole variety of reasons, have a lot of home commitments. So there could be reasons there where they want something that's very, very fluid and flexible that they can stop, start, pause for years if they want to, and come back to. So there's lots of different reasons why you might want to go down a burst of training and development, or start a qualification and see how it goes and so on, rather than signing up to what is quite a big commitment there.
So the way that you're describing that, rather than which one is best, which sometimes people probably look at in a binary way, it's kind of, it's a personal choice for what you want to achieve, isn't it? It's a career path. It's a career path choice, isn't it? What do you want, and which is the best route for you to get that?
Absolutely. And it's also taking into account that whilst work and career is really important, there's lots of other things that you need to weigh up alongside it as well. And absolutely is the case. The worst thing that we would want to do is to get someone to start an apprenticeship when it really wasn't the right thing for them in the first place.
Yeah, be that employer or employee.
Yes, absolutely. Nobody wins if that happens.
Yeah. So the third part of that relationship is the education company. How do they fit in to this relationship? So the employee and employer, they've got a commitment to each other. There's this 20% off the job training. So that's all documented. How does that third leg sort of interplay between the two?
So the first thing, the first involvement of the training provider is to sit them down and say, right, let's make a plan. How long is this going to take? How are you going to get these experiences in the workplace? How are we going to make sure that ideally we're training you in college just before you need it in the workplace? I mean, that would be perfect, wouldn't it? So you did design that training plan and everybody signs up to it and everybody knows what their agreement is. And then the next big role is, okay, how's it going? Because you know how life gets in the way. And so at periodic intervals, like I say, no more than 12 weeks apart, pause, reflect, let's see how we're doing against that plan. Do we need to slightly alter the plan? Let's go. But I also think that with all the best will in the world, sometimes lots of good stuff is taking place, but they don't know how to evidence that in their portfolio, or they don't know how to show how they're mapping across to that standard. So the coaches or the mentor or whatever it's called at whichever organisation, their job, because they are proficient and their expertise is about skills, behaviours and so on, they can... I sometimes listen into coaching reviews and I'll hear them where they just let the line manager and the apprentice have a little story about what they've been doing at work, you can hear the cogs turning, that the coach is going, do you realise you've just given a really good example of professional scepticism? Mm. And then suddenly that you can see it kind of ignites then with the learner, who knows to write that up as a reflection. Mm-hmm. And just very clearly show. So it's about guidance, making them understand about the apprenticeship world, I think.
Yeah. And that's obviously in addition to the knowledge, right? The delivery of the, you know what I mean? Like the bit that probably most people think that's what they go for. It's the package deal, the expertise that comes in the delivery, the expertise that comes in the teaching. But as you say, without the mechanism to check that it's working, which is good teaching anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
You kind of wouldn't know. So there is when you put all those component parts together, it does sound like quite a good idea, doesn't it?
Well, as I say, I'm absolutely. The interesting thing is, as we start talking about apprenticeship, you can almost get blasé about the quality of the qualification that sits within. And I don't want that to come across at all. I suppose it is making sure that we look at the other bits. But I mean, I could put it the other way, Stuart. You know, you might be teaching a class of 30 people something. Wouldn't you love the opportunity to sit down with the line managers of each of those 30 people and go, so is this all working out at work then for you? You know, it's quite a luxury to know that it goes all that way. Now, we can't do that. We can't always get it so that the specific tutor can do that. But actually, by getting a coach who understands, oh, they've just been in Stuart's class and I know what they've just been learning, and then they can sit down and they can bring that in there as well. But it absolutely, that key professional knowledge that they learn within their qualifications is like the absolute bedrock of all of this.
It's always one of the things that we've discussed in the past, isn't it, in terms of delivery, is it's always good to have the anecdotal stories from the workplace to take a piece of content and actually make it applicable. And they're kind of getting that as well through the coach, aren't they? And it would be good to listen into that, a bit like you've done, to listen into those conversations for the presenter to be actually able to see how that translates into the workplace.
But what's interesting, you either end up saying, so, you know, can you give me an example of where you've done this in the workplace then in the last 12 weeks? And ideally, they can give you an example and you can explain to them, or the coach can explain to them how they can document that and evidence that. Or they say, no, I haven't done that. Mm. And at which point the coach can turn to the line manager and go, is there any way, looking ahead to the next 12 weeks, can you think of a situation where Stuart would be able to? And so it might be, say, something about communication skills, might be about presenting. And Stuart's all, oh, no, I've never presented anything. Not that would be the case here. And then, you know, we've had instances where the line managers go, well, you know what? There's a little meeting. And what I could do is I'm doing a presentation. I could hand over to Stuart. He could do a couple of slides. Yeah. And then we could. And so sometimes it's not just that you're taking naturally occurring things in the workplace and looking to see how they're evidence. Sometimes you're helping to create these naturally occurring things. Now, that's got to be good for, I mean, I know it sounds scary, and the hypothetical Stuart is probably, you know, a little bit terrified right now. But that's a brilliant life skill. And what this has done is it's given you the opportunity all to agree. That's pushing you a little bit out of your comfort zone, but that is absolute development.
But within a framework of safety, isn't it? It is a training simulation. Do you know what I mean? It's a work-based simulation, but it's a training, you know, because the other alternative is somebody asks you to do it and you've never done it before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kathy, look, it's been really illuminating, really. I think in terms of just you look at a word apprenticeship on a piece of paper and it brings up certain connotations. But I think considering the role that each party plays, and look, the proof will ultimately be in the pudding as people develop through these apprenticeships. I want to sort of have a go at trying to summarise what we've discussed. So an apprenticeship gives the employee the chance to marry up what they learn in class with what they're doing in the workplace. And this experience is incredibly powerful, and it's actually one that's hard to simulate in an artificial exam environment. It also provides the opportunity to develop those higher level skills and behaviours that are all important for career progression. For the employer, They're far more involved and can tailor the workplace experience with academic development. It also helps with retention. And the education provider, they're the glue that makes the whole experience so effective. But the real driver of your passion, Cathy, is the belief that it can open the door to new opportunities for ordinary people who have the desire to do well, but without the apprenticeship might otherwise not have been given a chance. And Cathy, where do you find out more? Any websites that you'd recommend? Like, where can they find a list of all the apprenticeships they might be able to do?
So the National Apprenticeship Service is there to give independent advice on all the different apprenticeship standards that you can do. It gives you links to employers that will take on people wanting to do that and training providers who offer those standards. You could go to the Kaplan website if you wanted to be an accountant or work in banks or do data and tech. You could go there and they will very clearly show you the qualifications that you can do, all the apprenticeships that you can do. So you get that balance for you there. But I am pleased to say that if you Google apprenticeships in XXX these days, you will increasingly at least get good results in your search engine. I don't think that that would have been true 10 years ago.
Cathy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Kaplan's Learn Better podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. And don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts to help more people find us. Let's continue the conversation. Follow us on social at Kaplan UK and let us know what you would like to hear discussed on future episodes.